Hi there again, my name's Todd Fraser and it's my pleasure to bring you another special edition of the Essential Critical Care Podcasts from the 20th Annual ANZIC C2G meeting from the beautiful Noosa Heads in Queensland, Australia. Joining me today is Emma Ridley from the ANZIC's Research Centre and the Alfred Hospital in Melbourne to chat about the Intensive Nutrition Therapy in Critically Ill Patients trial, which is looking at supplemental parenteral nutrition in critically ill patients. Emma, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. So the intensive nutrition studies seems to be a pilot for laying the groundwork for future work.
Absolutely.
I note in the blurb, though, you mentioned that to date no large-scale trials have demonstrated an impact of early nutrition in critical illness. Can you summarise the data that's out there about this?
Yeah, so at the moment we're in a situation where there's been a lot of work recently. It's been quite prolific, which has been fantastic. But we haven't really moved that much forward in terms of understanding how much nutrition patients actually require. I guess we've gained a good understanding of what happens in standard care. We've found that some interventions maybe are just as good as usual care, but we haven't really found an intervention that's actually going to be able to make a difference and deliver extra nutrition, and is that important for patients? We still don't really know that answer. And so there, I guess you have to start asking yourself why that might be.
Yep.
And at the moment, probably because of the difficulty in doing large studies, we've done short interventions that have been run early in critical illness.
Okay.
And when you think about the changes in metabolism in critical illness, that might not be the right time to intervene. It actually might be later on when the metabolism changes to more of a recovery focus, and that might be a time when we need to intervene, but we also haven't investigated that at this point.
Have there been limitations in the design of the trials that might impact on the fact that we haven't been able to demonstrate any benefit?
There's always limitations. I guess it's very hard in large trials. I mean, investigators do their absolute best to design trials that are really well designed, but of course there's always limitations. One of the big limitations at the moment in practice and in research is the way we determine energy requirements. So in practice and research, we estimate energy requirements, so it's not based on a physiological number or anything like that. The gold standard method is indirect calorimetry, and that actually measures energy requirements, but it's not well utilised in clinical practice for lots of different reasons, and only a few small studies have actually investigated it. So that could possibly explain why we haven't seen any positive benefits, because we might be completely mistargeting our nutrition based on a number that's probably pretty well made up and inaccurate. But again, at the bedside, that's what we do, and that's easy, but that is a major issue.
So we know that we rarely achieve what we're planning to give anyway. So how much do you think that that impacts on the results that we've seen thus far?
Yeah, so in practice and in research, even with interventions that aim to give additional nutrition, majority of the time they'll only get to sort of 60 to 70%, and in practice we only deliver around 50 to 60% of what our patients actually require. And so that certainly can be impacting. We published a meta-analysis and a systematic review as part of my PhD where we actually looked at studies that delivered between 80 and 100% of what the patients were predicted to require compared to usual care, because a criticism of ours was that unfortunately these studies, they're not delivering what the patients actually need. Even though they're trying to, they're still not doing that. We didn't find any differences in our meta-analysis and systematic review, but the literature is consists of very small studies of low quality, and so that was part of our finding, was that we really need to continue to do large, high-quality studies that are well-designed, and then we'll be able to start moving forward with some evidence.
So tell us about your study in particular, how it's different from what's happened before.
So in some regards, I mean, it has limitations too. It was designed back in 2011 and 12. This is the original pilot. And we intervened fairly early with a supplemental PN intervention to try and deliver extra energy and protein. Supplemental PN still remains one of the only proven methods to provide additional energy to patients, so that's why we thought we would try it. And we also wanted to find a sicker group of patients that we thought might benefit from nutrition. In the new study that we're proposing, we're going to use that tested pilot that we used. We're going to make a few tweaks because that's the point of a pilot. We're going to improve it. We're going to delay the start of the intervention a little bit because we feel we may have started a little bit early in the first pilot, and the literature is now moved on and tell us that maybe we have to wait a little bit longer, but we're going to design and attempt a new ward-based intervention which has never been done anywhere in the world to our knowledge. So we're going to couple what we do in ICU with an intervention on the ward, which is a huge gap in the literature because often these patients will stay longer on the ward than they do in ICU, but we have no information about what happens to the nutrition and we don't intervene.
So just to clarify, we've got an intervention in the ICU and that will be looking at trying to maximise nutrition to critically ill patients and then following that on with a new part to this story, which is how to enhance their nutrition once they get to the wards.
Exactly. And the ICU intervention is based on our pilot that we recently published. And the important thing about that is that it's an individualised strategy for each patient. Mm-hmm. And so where they are going well with their enteral nutrition, we would not be applying the intervention. So it's really just to address those times due to fasting or intolerance or whatever happens for the patients that they can't receive adequate nutrition. Even if they're in the intervention arm and they're doing well from enteral or their tolerance improves, they stop fasting, then we don't provide that extra intervention, but it's there if they need it. And then as soon as these patients go to the ward, we will be doing, what we consider an optimal nutrition intervention, which is a really hands-on, tailored nutrition plan, regular communication with the treating medical team about the importance of nutrition and what our goals are, and communication with the patient and family around what preferences they might have in managing any food service organisation issues as well.
And what's the intervention that you're planning for the critically ill patients in the intervention group?
So in the intervention group, it's a supplemental parenteral nutrition arm. So do you mean in the ICU? Is that what you're asking? Yeah, so it's exactly based on our pilot that we've just done. So it is enteral nutrition as per usual care in the unit, and we ask clinicians to just optimise that as best they can. And then we have a titrated algorithm where we look at how much nutrition they've had and we top them up to around 80% of their requirements with a parenteral nutrition strategy.
Yep.
And that assessment is conducted every day, basically.
Now, in the synopsis of your trial, it indicates that you're seeking a 15% increase in your energy. Why did you choose that number? How did that come about?
So that was based on work from the pilot. So in the pilot study, it was 100 patients and we intervened for 7 days in the ICU. But we also, in two sites, investigated what happens after ICU. So we followed those patients and that was part of my PhD as well. And so from that work, we were able to look at what happened over the whole hospital stay in terms of their nutrition intake. So we saw that they received around 1,500 calories over their whole hospital stay. It was around sort of 75% of their requirements. And so we set that we think 15% is the minimum acceptable clinical difference. So it's pretty low, but we really felt that was the lowest point we would be comfortable to find a difference, and the lowest point probably that you would think it would make a difference as well. So it's around 200 calories a day.
So is your outcome here that you want to demonstrate that you can deliver more energy for these patients, or is it a patient-centred outcome around their mortality, their rehabilitation markers, whatever it might be?
At this point, it's just an energy outcome to see if we can feasibly do it, because the intervention being delivered in ICU and on the ward is probably going to have its challenges, and we want to see that we can actually do that. We are collecting a whole heap of information on patient-centered outcomes, though, because the idea is that we would use that to then inform a larger study, tweak the intervention and improve on it. So unfortunately, it's not a patient-centred outcome this time, but we're working towards that.
So crystal balling, what does that ultimate trial look like to you, and what outcomes would you expect from it?
I would really like longer-term outcomes. I think they're really important. Yep. We need some patient-centred functional outcomes, and we have Carol Hodgson on our management committee, so she's going to be really well-placed to help us with that. Crystal balling it, I think it would be really important to have optimal nutrition in the ICU, particularly in probably the second half of their ICU stay, and then moving on to a tailored nutrition intervention where patients are able to continue enteral nutrition if they need it, and they can have oral nutrition with supplements quite readily provided, and their nutrition needs met, I guess, and followed up appropriately. I think at the moment we're in a situation where you know, to try and move patients forward, tubes are taken out probably too early. Enteral nutrition is not really assessed as if they need it or not. And unfortunately, we don't have the resources to follow them up as much as possible. So we'll be able to get some really good information about what's happening in standard care too, which is something I'm really interested in, because we have no information about what standard care is for these patients. And so if it turns out that we can design an intervention that's implemented by all staff members, for example, and it's just a suite of things, and that would be an ideal thing. I don't think it has to be dietitians. I think it needs to be a team effort.
Yep.
And we might be able to package it together.
So, Emma, I understand you're looking for trial sites potentially. How do people get involved if they're keen?
Yeah, so we're looking for 14 sites in Australia and New Zealand to come on this exciting ride with us. So they can email me. That's probably the easiest thing. So my email is emma.ridley, so it's just all lowercase. My surname's R-I-D-L-E-Y at monash.edu, and we would love to hear from them, or even if they just want to have a more of a discussion with us about how it might work. We need sites who have an interested ICU and an interested nutrition department, but we would be very happy to talk to nutrition departments and ICUs if that would help you make the decision, or just make contact if you're interested, and we can take it from there.
Emma, thanks very much for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for joining me again on this episode of the ANZIC CTG Noosa Meeting Podcasts. For more episodes, please check out my blog at essentialcriticalcare.com or search for Essential Critical Care on iTunes.